I'm trying to listen to instructions again right before we met again today. But so thanks for being here. It looks like we have about 10 to 12 people signing up, and maybe we'll get a few more as time goes on. I know it's in the middle of the day. Sometimes it's hard, especially for people on the West Coast. Today I just want to talk about some key concepts that we had started discussing at the end of our last phone conversation. And I sent out an email. Apparently not everyone got that email. I will be sending out another email tonight or tomorrow morning. So if you don't get something from me, just let me know, and I'll check your email address again. The key questions, I'm going to just kind of look through them here, is what are the different audiences for the post-intro course? How quickly should students be introduced to multivariate statistics? And by multivariate statistics, I'm defining that to mean statistical techniques with more than one explanatory variable. What mathematical preparations are needed for treating the various topics? Are some topics easier to teach in these than others? Should we focus on some topics over others? How much mathematical detail should be in the course? Do we lower the math requirement in order to attract a more general audience? So, again, all the mathematics issues required with a second course. How do the topics vary depending on your audience? Do topics depend on math or stat majors or a more general clientele? And the last question is, should the second course be restricted to only people who have taken an intro class, or should the material be tailored so that talented math majors or other talented students could jump into a second course? And then after that, I've just listed some notes from the meeting that we had in at ESCOT this year that I thought were kind of nice, too, just summary things, what should be included in the course. Some of the things we decided should be in every second course was applied problems, writing and communication skills, proper understanding of how to collect data, sampling issues, appropriate technology, and dealing with messy data. And these materials should be case-based, colorful, motivating, and engaging. So I don't know if anyone agrees or disagrees with that. Does anyone have any other questions they think we should add to this list? We'll try and get to it at the end. Do you think this kind of addresses most of the things we... It's probably more than an hour's discussion anyway. So.
It's hard talking into a quiet group.
It really is.
Right. So I'll just say this seems like a good set of questions to start with.
Thank you, Danny. I appreciate that. So first of all, one of the challenges of a post-intro course is that there's so many different intro courses where students are coming from. So what we have here is listed just three different types of students that we may see in that course. The first course for graduate students, so some master's or graduate or PhD level students in other disciplines where they're required to take a statistics course. They often are, they have an intro stats course and then they have a required course at graduate school as well. There's a growing number of students who pass the AP exam or are taking intro stat. In fact, the AP statistics exam is one of the fastest growing AP exams there is. It's gone from 17,000 to what I think it's over 130,000 now in just
Holy
over
cow.
10 years.
Per year, yep.
Yeah, so and at least here, we've almost doubled the number of intro stats courses we've taught in the last 6 or 7 years, and they're almost always filled to capacity. So we have a need just on campus to send some of the students who love statistics and are not necessarily going to be math majors. And finally, there's just undergraduate and graduate students who come to me quite often who are doing research projects or are trying to do more advanced things in their own courses. And those courses, when they read research projects, they don't see the t-test anymore. They're doing non-parametric tests. And they say, well, we didn't cover this in intro stats. Is there something here that I can learn more about? I just had a chemistry professor saying, well, when do people learn about principal components or factor analysis? And it's like, well, we don't do that in intro. So,
may I add another group to this?
Sure.
I teach in the School of Business, and then it's required for accrediting schools of business to have a second course. They may not actually call it statistics, but at our school it's still Stats 1 and Stats 2. So it's a very common second course of in statistics, so more techniques other areas, they farm out the first stats course, and then the second course is taught in the business, and it very frequently is non-statisticians, and it's some type of operations or something like that. But here, I mean, I'm born, bred, and raised as a statistician, and I'm teaching these two courses.
Okay.
What about people who take a stat minor?
Okay. That would be a majors. Are we dealing with majors or non-majors here?
I assume we want to deal with both.
So that I think that's a good point. Gosh, I hate this. I'm such a bad typer, so please bear with me. But, math or stat majors, we shouldn't forget those in our audience.
Majors, minors, right.
Yeah. And so obviously they should be interested in the second course as well, too. And that also ties into many of the, like Crafty and other national organizations that have said, a good undergraduate mathematics curriculum includes at least one applied data analysis type course. And there's several national organizations that are pushing that.
No, in addition
pushing
to an intro stats.
Many, for example, in our clip, in our place, the Math 115 cannot count towards a math major because it's very focused on quantitative reasoning.
Mm-hmm.
But we do have a 200 level intro stats. That's a very applied data analysis class, but it's not required for our math majors. Our math majors can go through and get a math major without any statistics course.
And Danny here. So at McAllister, we have an intro course that's taken by biologists and economists and such, and that course is required for the math major. So that's an introductory course, but it's mathematical enough that it was attractive to the math faculty.
Doug here from Wittenberg. We also have an intro course, database course, that has about half non-math majors, but about half math majors in it. It is required for our math major. We also have an intro course for non-majors only, but that one that has especially econ folks and selected quantitatively more able non-majors, they take the course that math majors can count for part of their programs as well.
Okay.
This is John Clement. I'm at a community college, and although I do teach sometimes at the four-year college, and I teach a second stat business stat course similar to the one that woman before was talking about, but I don't see, it seems like there's a lot of talk here about math majors and people like that. I always felt the second course or the intro course was not going to be necessarily a math major course. Not that it wouldn't be good information for them, but I wasn't expecting it to be mathematically sophisticated.
Mm-hmm.
So this is Danny again. There's a question of whether a course needs to be mathematically sophisticated. Sophisticated is an odd word, I guess. So whether or not it needs to have a lot of prerequisites that are mathematical in order to be a meaningful second course, and that can be meaningful to people who are in those first categories, graduate students, AP students who had the AP course. And I think the answer is that sophisticated is not the same thing as having a lot of prerequisites. You just have to be very thoughtful about what it is that you're presenting and what you need to teach the students in order for them to understand the statistics that you're teaching. So our course has as a prerequisite, our first calculus course. That's the prerequisite for it.
But this is Kirsten from the Netherlands. I was at Michigan for a long time, and we had kind of a split between two different tracks where there's a track that is calculus-based and there's a track that's non-calculus-based. And math and stat majors and minors, they were pushed kind of more towards the calculus-based track, whereas the psychology, social science students, econ majors, et cetera, they would take the non-calculus-based track.
So when you say a track, how many courses do you mean in a track? Is that one course?
Well, like two classes, like the intro course and then the post-intro course.
Okay, so there's two course tracks. Okay.
Right, so you can take an intro course with calculus, and you can take an intro course without calculus.
And were they different?
And the same holds for the post-intro class.
Were the courses different?
Oh, yeah, I taught the calculus-based post-intro class where we actually derive standard errors, and, you know, you do all this stuff. And I now teach a post-intro course to social science majors, and there's the most difficult math we do is to take the square root. I mean, you know, it's a non-calculus-based class, so they're very different.
And, yeah, I think we are trying to make sure to focus on everything we talked about in the post-intro is an applied post-intro course.
Right, so the non-calculus-based route.
Okay.
No, I'm sorry, I didn't understand the conclusion. Why is that the non-calculus-based route?
If you're teaching an applied class, isn't that usually more the user and the reader of the stats, or am I understanding this wrong?
Well, certainly the user. I think, you know, an ability to analyze data and the sort of thing that, you know, that first category talks about graduate students in other fields, they need to be able to do stuff.
So they need to know how to use a computer program and to understand how to interpret output?
I think that would be essential.
So, but then there's no calculus used for that,
I think that's wrong. And
okay.
The reason I asked you about whether the courses were the same is that often the idea of calculus-based is that the students are not math-phobic, and therefore you can do a proof.
Do more stuff.
And you described that other course as deriving standard errors, for example, as opposed to just presenting standard errors.
Right.
But there are all sorts of uses for mathematics at the calculus level than deriving things or than doing integrals of distributions that you can't integrate anyways. So a really important concept, for example, is the idea of rates of change of linear approximations.
Uh-huh.
And you don't really need calculus to get to those, but
no.
Those subjects typically show up in calculus courses.
Okay.
I would also like to say, too, that in my second course, I often introduce the concept, you know, for example, principal component analysis or even multiple regression. I talk about doing matrix algebra or, you know, linear algebra type things, which comes after our calc sequence. But I try and make it accessible for students who haven't seen it before, but it certainly is a mathematical concept that we're trying to pull in to the statistics course.
Right, and Shonda, you've written linear combinations, which is, reflects what you just said about linear algebra ideas. But actually, I had said also linear approximations.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Right? But going back to what you said about linear approximations, I teach students who've never seen calculus before the basics that they need for linear algebra. It does not involve a sophisticated mathematics, if you want.
Right.
It involves an intuition about direction. And so if you do need to teach them about collinearity, about ranks of subspaces and things like this, that could easily be taught to high school students. You just have to teach it not by taking determinants.
That sounds like a complicated calculus-based class, though, to me.
This is John again from the community college perspective and the AP students. I mean, if you're going to have a course for AP students, the skills they might have are going to be intermediate algebra skills at best, and even some of the people who take the introductory course are even going to have strong intermediate algebra skills. I see a second course being designed for them. I saw it as a follow-up course for the intro course, not the calculus-based or not the more heavy-duty course, but the typical course like we see in the typical textbooks we see, such as a Roxy.
That's what I thought.
Or in tech, or any one of those texts. Yeah, any one of those texts.
Yeah, and I think in general that's true. I think Danny has a very innovative approach. I don't know if you've seen his textbook or not, but I think, Danny, isn't it true you successfully taught that to people as their first stats class where they've seen some of these concepts?
It is their first stats class. And
they don't have a lot of calculus background either, right?
They have one semester, whether they got that in high school or at McAllister. And then there's the math majors who take it after linear algebra. But it's a quarter of all the students at the college who take this course, so it's not a course just for people who have very strong mathematical backgrounds.
And
yeah,
I think
this is Nick Horton from Smith College. I'm also teaching using Danny's book and materials as an intro class for our engineering students. And again, they're coming in with computer science and also calculus and also computer science. But it's been working really well as their intro.
Yeah, but yeah. I don't see that as addressing the AT community college type student at all. I hope, and you mentioned them as one of them. I mean, I see that as one course, as one option, but I don't see that as the option or the course. I just don't think it can be. It's not going to attract students, and it's not going to serve their needs.
Are you saying for students who are still in high school and want to take a second stats course in high school?
Well, no, they most likely would have graduated from high school,
okay,
and they would look for something in a community college or at their 4-year college. But a lot of them are just not going to take any more mathematics. They're not going to take. They may have taken pre-calculus. They may not have. They probably have in high school if they remember it. But in the college course, a lot of them won't have taken it, and some of them will be looking for another course.
Yeah, I think one of the complexities here is there's just not one solution. There's not one clear-cut solution that can work, you know, all the time in every case. And I think there's a lot of preference in what gets taught in this second course right now, too. And I think hopefully we can talk about some of this in a little bit later. But I think we can say that there exist courses where at least some level of calculus is integrated into the course at a level that's still applicable for students who don't have a lot of math background. Is that appropriate?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think so too. This is Doug at Wittenberg again, and I do have the one course that non-majors only can take, but the one that majors are allowed to take, even though it's half non-majors as well. And I'm using the Chance and Rossman iScan materials, which nominally have a calculus prereq, and so that's what my prereq is as well, just one semester of calculus. But I use it very sparingly, if ever, and it's mostly just to focus the audience. I realize that's not going to be the audience that everybody has, and that some students coming right out of high school have never seen calculus, and this wouldn't be their course, at least right away, anyway. But it sounds like we are covering, through our discussion here, the breadth of the different audiences that we teach at.
And I think that's true, at least in my second course that I teach. I think there's points where I bring in calculus or linear algebra because it enhances the conversation for students who've had it, but it's at a level where it's not enough that students who haven't had it, or it's not that frequent throughout the course. There's probably a few weeks where it's in, but not the whole thing.
Right. This is Kim from Juniata. I think we're more talking about comfort with not just calculus. I mean, calculus is nice, and it's fun to use it in my class, and I get to because mine requires calc. But I think we're talking about level of comfort with calculations more than calculus. I mean, I think the body of students I teach in my intro class that requires calc are just much more comfortable if I do basic algebra than the students I teach in quantitative reasoning. And that does change what we teach. And so if you're talking about a second course for those students who've taken a quantitative reasoning class, that would probably be a very different course than the second course for the students who've had the calc-based class, not because of the calc, but because of their comfort with other aspects of calculation.
I think that's a great
algebra point.
And I do want to also interrupt here and just say, if you see me typing something that's not quite right, please let me know. You know, I'm just trying to keep up and make sure, and I'll probably try and edit these a little bit before I send them out. But if you have anything that you think I'm missing or I forgot to put or didn't put in quite right, just let me know.
Yeah, so Danny here. I don't want to drag this point out, but it occurs to me that people may have very different ideas when we use the word calculus. And the idea I mean is certainly not the algebra of differentiation and integration by parts and the chain rule, but ideas like functions, linear approximations, rates of change. And those could be taught independent of the word calculus, but they're not often these days taught independent of them. You do see it. You do see that in a high school algebra course, but I question whether there's a lot of relevance for, you know, integration by parts. But those ideas of approximation and functions are very important.
I would like to, before we get into the next topic a little bit, I really like your comment, Danny, before about sophistication is not the same thing as having a lot of math prerequisites. And I think that's a concept that sometimes it's hard for our math colleagues to understand. Could we discuss that a little bit? Is that okay?
This is Amy from Duquesne. I'm the business student, school person. I think that what Danny said is the same thing as what Kim said. It's a level of understanding or you know, I'm going to be careful with math literacy, but a literacy and understanding of how to work with numbers, with rates, which are very rates of change, which are very difficult sometimes for not people who are not comfortable in math, functions and being able to use the linear function. We tell our students that they have to have calculus to take stats, but I don't use calculus in any of my calculations. I just want them to have an understanding of dealing with functions and an understanding of dealing with rates, as Danny was saying. So I think it's more literacy, sophistication, or comfort zone, as Kim had said, with math.
One thing I was thinking about, I agree with it. I think that's part of it. I just moved that underneath there. What I was thinking of, though, is just today in class, I was helping my students who are, this is a calc-based applied intro stats course. They're designing their first, their final projects. And some people are doing like memorization with sound or not sound and things like that. And the difficulty of properly accounting for the lurking variables, and setting up their experiment properly is very, very complex. There's so many lurking variables. There's so many potential biases. You have to worry about, I can't even think of the word now. If you take the same exam over and over, you're going to get similar results, repeated measures, designs, and things like that. And making sure they set up the experiment properly, there's a lot of nuances in there that many math students don't ever think about. I mean, I think there's a lot of quantitative reasoning questions that our math majors may not really study in any of their math courses. I mean, properly interpreting and looking for potential errors in a graph, I think, is something that sometimes math majors can graduate with and not really understand.
But I think they have a pretty good level of communication with you when you sit down and talk to them about, we need to pay attention to these things, whereas someone without a comfort zone in math may not even know, even after the fact, come up with some good ways of being able to reduce bias or improve their sampling design.
Well, and one thing that I was thinking about was just the sophistication of the language, and oftentimes teenagers aren't that careful about their verbal communication about these ideas.
Yeah, I like that.
This is Doug here at Wittenberg again. In comparing the math majors who take my intro class with the science majors, I've found some experience much like the comments you just heard, namely that the science students are usually a little more savvy in terms of recognizing the implications of a poor design or figuring out what possible lurking influences there might be. And it's at least in my experience so far teaching this class, the math majors are at a bit of disadvantage in terms of science thinking. So I might even color the overall topic here. I'd say sophistication is quite a bit different than mathematical sophistication.
I'm with that.
I like that.
And as a corollary to that, what we do in an intro course then, this is maybe one reason why I bristle so much when I hear about calculus-based courses or algebra-based courses. I'm wondering, I guess maybe I'm still not entirely sure what that really means. And to get to the heart of statistically sophisticated thinking doesn't seem to depend much, for me anyway, on whether the audience is mathematically sophisticated, at least over and above what's been said already, namely that there's a certain comfort level with quantitative ideas and arguments.
In fact, that's what we do in our we have a Calc 2 requirement for this upper-level intro stats course, but we make it very clear that the only thing that's really different in there is the level of sophistication and the level of detail and the speed at which we go through things. So, again, I think we put that prerequisite of Calc 2 there, not because we cover a lot of calculus. We can mention it once or twice in the class, but it just means the students, are better quantitative thinkers.
I think that's probably, this is Amy, this is, I think that's probably what I would interpret as well. I think that was a good way of putting it.
Yeah, so again, this is Nick Horton from Smith College. We dance around this because we have a calculus or discrete math prerequisite. And so it really is kind of explicit that there's not much overlap between those two courses. What we're looking for is the ability to be able to deal with things a little bit more abstractly.
Okay.
Yeah, and I guess I'll just piggyback real quick. This is Nathan at Hope College. We've addressed this by saying either calculus or some significant experience with statistics. That could be AP statistics. That could be just a research experience or something like that. And so I end up with a mix of students, some who maybe are a little more quantitatively mature, but typically those students, the math students, have to sort of get their head around a statistical approach to thinking that's very different than what they've been used to in calculus. So we kind of, are a hybrid that way too.
I like that. I think we might change our prereqs too. Sounds like a good idea.
So what I'm hearing is that people would like to see a second course which has minimum prerequisites and, as Nathan just said, maybe some calculus or some statistically significant experience with statistics.
Right.
But it doesn't sound like anyone is saying multivariate or linear algebra. No one is saying that, right?
That it's required for the second course?
That we should talk about building a second course that has that kind of requirement, a Calc 2, Calc 3, linear algebra requirement. No one is saying that. Is that right?
Right.
And people are disputing whether even Calc 1 should be a requirement.
Yeah, this is Paul at St. Olaf. We kind of taught this kind of as a mixed audience. Like either you could either be a math major with some calculus and maybe some linear algebra, or it could be have some intro stats. And now we've gone to just requiring some kind of intro stats for the second course. And it kind of grew out of just kind of a, I don't know, a frustration, but just kind of, so trying to give this condensed version of all the important statistical concepts in the first few weeks for those that hadn't seen it yet. And so I think we just decided to get where we wanted to go in this course, that we are now going to require some kind of experience with statistics, whether or not that's AP stats or, stats at St. Olaf or something like that.
And you teach from the Sleuth book, is that right?
We do. We teach our second course from the Sleuth book. And so if they take stats at St. Olaf, they could either come kind of from our kind of lower level intro, concepts and controversies kind of course, or from kind of our calc-based, which is the Chance Rossman type of intro course. And I guess the other footnote is our colleagues in mathematics have just decided that math majors that take that Chance Rossman intro can get credit toward the math major for that course.
Yay!
Yeah. So I don't know. So we're in a transition point here. So we have no data on how this is working, but this is where we are going forward.
This is Nancy Boynton. I just wanted to mention that for several years now, all our math majors are required to take a course, and I've been using the Chance Rossman book for them.
Yeah, and this is Nathan again. Let me just follow up on my comment from a little while ago where I said, we've got a course that has either a calc prereq or a significant experience in stats. Without getting into all the details, that class is actually an intro stats class. It's an accelerated intro class. So we feel like AP stats students, we want them to get something at the college level that's intro stats. So like Paul was saying, to say, in our second course, we don't really know what students have had before in terms of intro stats. I mean, we're sort of addressing that with this sort of quick 8-week overview of the highlights of intro stats for students who've got some quantitative background. They can handle the material much faster, so we know what students we're getting in the second class. So, I mean, Paul, I agree with you that otherwise it's just a little bit too chaotic in that second class, getting some students, with sort of all these different knowledge bases that you're operating with.
Yeah, and Nathan, I think the the original course that we taught at St. Olaf, where we had kind of this mixed audience, kind of grew out of my experience at Connecticut College, where we were just starting up, and we were just trying to get an audience. And so we, you know, we just wanted any live bodies in there, you know, essentially. But now we're finding, you know, more and more students really have this stats background. We're getting a smaller and smaller percentage that have never seen it before. And so it seemed crazy to start tailoring this these first few weeks to a smaller and smaller percentage.
And, Paul, you wrote a paper about your experiences, didn't you, for JSE?
I did, yeah, back when I kind of piloted this course back at Connecticut College. Yeah.
Well, I suppose being in the School of Business, this is Amy, I'm in a little bit different situation. I'm looking at a second major's course that follows pretty much the last 10 years of what do we want students to know from in a non-major's intro course. And I was looking to kind of, in my area then, go that next step. My students, our students, and we're pretty controlled because we're business, so we know what they had in the first semester pretty much, and except those that transfer in or change majors. So all of this stuff that we've been talking about for the last decade or so of what do we put in an intro non-majors course, now what do we put into a non-majors second course? If they've got pretty much what the GAES guidelines are suggesting and what we think is a pretty good intro first course, what do we want them to know next?
Now, the GAES guidelines are not about
that's true. I realized after I said that. I'm sorry.
let's kind of go into that, I think, a little bit. What goes into a second course? And I just would like to hear, too, once we talk about what goes into a second course in terms of topics, if we need to restrict it by majors or non-majors. I think that's an interesting question. Is some things appropriate for math majors where it's not appropriate for other people in that second course? Does that sound okay?
It's okay by me.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. I mean, so if we talk about topics, I can throw out a bunch of them. For example, non-parametrics. Anyone else? Regression?
Well, I think that regression and analysis of variance are pretty much standard in a second course. And paired t-tests we don't get in a first course. So it's kind of the beginning.
Isn't that pretty standard in a first course, though?
Pardon?
Isn't the paired t-test pretty standard in a first course?
Not by us. So I guess
okay.
And then, of course, ANOVA means different things to different people. So I would say analysis of covariance, which makes it maybe a little bit clearer where the link to multivariate regression.
I would add a keener focus on assumptions and conditions underlying methods and a way to diagnose whether they're met.
Yeah, and I think when I think about analysis of variance, I think about how to properly design an experiment.
Experimental design.
Yeah, setting up a design. And I was afraid that I was going to be, that's also in an intro course, but I just really don't think that I can get to good designing of experiments in an intro course until we get past hypothesis testing and start seeing things.
Okay. Well, let's just start here a minute. With non-parametrics, and please tell me if I'm wrong, I think much of non-parametrics can be done through simulations. And I think if students have quantitative reasoning skills, they can understand simulations. They may have seen simulations in a first test, even though that's not real common. But I think non-parametrics is something both majors and non-majors should definitely see.
Can I just throw a question out there? This is Nathan. I mean, I guess my feeling on non-parametrics lately, and maybe I'm an outlier on them, is that with the advent of tests like permutation tests and more computationally intensive techniques, that non-parametrics are on their way out.
I agree.
I agree, too.
Okay, I guess I consider permutation randomization test a part of non-parametrics.
Oh, okay.
The Wilcoxon.
Right, that's what I thought you were talking about in these, you know, rank-based tests and this kind of stuff. I mean, traditionally, I guess, as of, say,
and years ago would have been in the last chapter in your intro stats book under a non-parametrics chapter and not a computationally intensive test.
You'd be amazed how many people in the psychology, for instance, still use those rank-based tests.
Right. Well, right. And so I guess, you know, I mean, there's this tension, and I know George Cobbs talked about this, you know, when he talked about, you know, sort of using the two-sample t-test. You know, why are people using the two-sample t-test? Because that's what we teach them. Why do we teach them? Because that's what people use. And I guess my perspective on the Wilcoxon and tests like that, if we put those all in one category, is just if we look at the statistics behind it and the mathematics of it, I mean, these other methods are much better and more robust. And they can, so anyway, I kind of wanted to hear what people were thinking on that.
I want to object to this way of describing non-parametrics. So I don't think a permutation and randomization test has any but a historical link to non-parametrics. You can use those tests also for cases where you're not trying to get at distribution-free results. And in fact, permutation and randomization are powerful ways to teach about sampling and sampling distributions and hypothesis testing, regardless of whether or not you're worried about the shape of a distribution. So I would just pull out the randomization stuff, randomization simulation as a category, and just for the purpose of discussion, talk about non-parametrics in terms of we're worried about what the distribution is, and we want to have a way to deal with that.
Now, so you're saying permutation randomization tests should be different than the non-parametrics Wilcoxon rank test. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. Yeah, it's a completely different topic.
Yeah, okay. Lack of a better word, there, stuff. Okay, so non-parametrics, because that's something I hear from my clients a lot, is that, and actually as my book is going through a review process, I've gotten, one of some of the most comments I've gotten is that we need to include, because I have a permutation randomization chapter in my book, and they say, well, where's the Wilcoxon sign rank test and things like that. So that's kind of an interesting comment.
Yeah.
I wasn't going to include it, but I did include it as an aside just because I had so many comments about it.
Right. Well, let's design for the future instead of for the past.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess that's my, this is Nathan, I guess that's my point, too. I mean, I think, yeah, it's the clients, you know, I mean, a lot of them, I tell my students this, too. You know, we teach them permutation tests. So you're going to go back and you're going to work with your faculty member, and they're not going to necessarily know what this is, but you can show them how powerful it is. And how it, you know, in cases where, you know, it can sort of do much better than some of the standard stuff. So
you agree that simulation and randomization-based tests?
I'm for it.
Yeah, I guess that seems, I mean.
Yeah.
And just to be clear, I think there's sometimes a not real clear understanding between the difference between permutation and randomization tests. I think a permutation test where you have an observational study and you're seeing how likely things are to occur versus a randomization, which usually is based on experimental design, and it's been set up where you've randomly assigned what's happened, and you're simulating that randomization.
Uh-huh.
You know, another way to describe this, if you'll excuse, is to call these algebra-free tests as opposed to distribution-free tests. And if you're interested in lowering the amount of algebra that you use in a course, this is a nice way to get at the statistical concepts without the algebra.
And do we all agree? Does anyone think that that should not be part of a second course? I mean, I think it's something that isn't now. I mean, I think a lot of people do not include it. I guess personally, I feel it's something the direction we should be going.
You mean permutation tests?
Simulation, you know, just at least to understand that concept and the power of simulation studies.
For a number of us, that would be in the intro course as well.
Yeah.
Right.
I guess that would, yeah. I mean, that would be my argument. I mean, looking forward, it seems like that is where the intro course should be.
Yeah.
Because that's a fundamental understanding of the core ideas of inference. And so that should really be, in my mind, in the first course and not something that we're going to put into the second class.
Well, but I think the argument is it should be in both, in that, you know, I don't think you can give it full you know, everything you really need in just the first course. So I think that's an important topic that's not always in the second course now, but I think it is one of the things that needs to be there in building on what was in the first course and taking it to the next level.
That was Nick.
Yeah.
And if I can add on to that, Danny, so we haven't yet said what the first course is, but there was a hint that it's sort of the AP course. And it's certainly not there in the AP course. And it seems unlikely in the near future that it's going to change because of the allergy to computation in the AP course. But in a second course, for example, and here's a topic I would include, you can use simulation to talk about power in an easy way. And power is not so often, I think, discussed seriously in a first course.
Yeah, and I agree with that.
Right, and I guess, this is Nathan. I mean, I don't want to be AP statistics bashing, but in my mind, we can, at the college level, leverage this opportunity we have to get something up on AP stats, which, I mean, is sort of, if we think of it from a, you know, more students in our intro stats classes with paying our salaries perspective, then what we've done is how can we be different than AP stats? Well, what we can do is we can provide our students, you know, a guaranteed computer-based statistics experience. Well, then what do? You leverage simulation, permutation, randomization tests to do things like power analysis, not covered in AP stats, and these sorts of things, and try to make that the new intro class at the college level. And so what we've done is we sort of have that for our AP stats students. They feed into this 8-week accelerated version, goes over the basics, hit some of these permutation simulation power ideas, and then they can launch into the more, you know, the second course where they're doing the multivariable stuff.
So, Nathan, you're including as a topic in the second course computation. I'm for it.
Can you clarify what you mean by that?
That you should be able to do things like simulations and permutation tests, which are always done with the computer, right?
In the first course, you mean?
I'm talking about in the second course.
Well, are you saying should we use computer software in a second course? Is that your question, Danny?
I guess I would just like to suggest that we say a second course should introduce people to using statistical software in a serious way.
I
would 100% concur with that one. This is Amy. I don't. I'm in the lab every week in the second course.
I think it's...
Don't you? This is Kirsten. Isn't that done in the first course too?
Mine is also done in the first course as well.
Okay.
But I'm in the labs twice as much in the second semester than I am in the first semester.
Okay.
Half of all college sections of introductory statistics make no use of the software, according to the the American Math Society.
You're kidding me.
It's scary. I know.
How did I not know that? This is amazing.
And so that's my question: is a computer lab required?
Oh yeah.
Hello, Madison from Buffalo State. I. deeply believe that it's absolutely necessary for second grade students, second level stats course, and especially because many of them will never go and use the physical test. They will go to software, and there are a lot of software. What they need to know what to use and how to understand, check assumptions, how to understand what they are getting from there. So it should be a must for the second grade statistical course, I believe that.
Okay, so does that mean they have to be in a computer? Because actually, Linda Collins from University of Chicago was the introductory stats coordinator, and at University of Chicago they used the Chance Rossman book, but it was not in a lab-based classroom. She had a computer up front, but all the homework assignments were done outside of class where they use computers, but they were not in the classroom. And I thought that was pretty innovative. And she had huge classes. She had about 50 students in her class and was doing Chance Rossman and coordinating that for many, many sections every year.
Yeah, this could be different. And I think every college will adjust the use of computers and the use of labs depending on their class size. And in case when you have a huge class size, probably that could be a good thing. But I still believe that OLAB is extremely important, especially for the second grade, the second level course, because I don't think that we will have huge second level courses, at least for now. Sometimes we will have even smaller than like intra-statistical courses.
So lab or classroom or what? This, it seems that people's sense is that you should be learning how to use statistical software in the second course.
I also think, this is Amy again, I also think that the topics that were briefly thrown up earlier, you don't want to do those with small sample sizes anyway. So you want larger, realistic data for these people to get a hold on. Why would you not do that? You'd have to be able to use the statistical software there.
Right.
And interesting enough, what I find when I'm teaching experimental design and just even going to ANOVA or ANCOVA or regression is students don't even know how to put the data into the computer or to see just how to talk to it to say how it's going to set up the design or the model. You know, whether it's stacked or unstacked or how you get your different variables in there per record so that you can talk to a software to do that analysis for you.
Is that Amy, I think?
That was Amy. I'm sorry.
No, that's fine. So you're saying they're enter a second course without knowing how to enter data?
Well, it's not that they don't know how to enter data. It's when you start setting up the experimental design, they don't always understand the I's and the J's and how will Minitab, what do they mean by stacked and unstacked, and how do I get that two-way ANOVA into the right model to talk to the computer? It seems like such a silly thing, but it takes a while for them to get that far. Interpreting the output seems to be easy sometimes, after all.
and
they can only learn that by doing their own analyses to some extent. You know, they come back and tell me that it was getting the data that was hard, getting it into the computer that was hard. Once I got to click the proper statistical tool, the rest of it was easy.
Yeah, my experience is that students don't distinguish between a case and a variable until they're taught to make that distinction.
Perhaps, yes. I really like to see the second course as the student doing more and me doing less.
I like that,
too. I think that's a good description.
Okay, well, we have 5 minutes left. Didn't quite get all our questions answered here. I think some of these things kind of tie into different sections and so forth, too. But just to kind of conclude, what I see as kind of the overall concepts that we've discussed is, so help me understand if we're going to summarize what we've discussed today, essentially, is that quantitative skills are required, but that is different than mathematical sophistication.
Yes.
Correct.
I can't type. And if that's the case, we also discussed about having some kind of, you know, standard group that comes into the statistics course, just basic hypothesis testing and statistical inference is essentially required before they can come to the second course.
Oh, I think that. I don't actually recall us saying that, but I think that was certainly implied.
Okay. Computer software is required.
As a prerequisite or in the course?
Yeah, that's in the course. You're right. If there's anything else, if you have any other key points, too.
We mentioned whether we need to discuss the difference between do we need to design the course differently for majors and non-majors and graduate students versus non-majors, or...
This is John. I was, to go back to what I've been hearing today with people, some people seeing calculus as a minimal base, I think you have to have two courses. You have to think about two courses if you're going to do that.
See, I was actually thinking that we'd kind of gotten to the point where as long as they're quantitatively talented and they've seen hypothesis tests, it's really the same course.
Which is really the same course?
Both what I would do for math majors and non-math majors. But
well,
it would require.
You might be, but I can see one course where you can talk about multiple regression and another course where you can talk about stratification. But it's going to be hard to talk about multiple regression unless you can talk about what a function is, unless you can talk about what a rate of change is. So it's not clear to me that you can say a second course should assume no calculus level. I think that it's likely that there's going to be two different varieties of them.
I think we all have a very different perception of calculus background.
Mm-hmm.
Because when I think about calculus, I think about integrals and differentiation, et cetera. And I teach multiple regression, and I teach ANCOVA to students who have no calculus whatsoever. And
it's
it just all depends on how you bring it.
Yeah, I thought we kind of clarified that as to the statistical sophistication, not necessarily mathematical.
Right, right.
Right, so, I mean, if you want to say knowing what a function is statistical sophistication, that's fine. And I certainly agree. The basis for ANCOVA is the Pythagorean theorem. It is not integration. Maybe I have a different point of view because our first calculus course here is not about formulas for integration and differentiation, but about functions of multiple variables.
Okay.
But it's a kind of qualitative calculus if you want.
Hmm.
And I think a lot of business calculus is that way.
Right.
No, they make them integrate, but we don't in the stat course.
Right. Now, I have taught stat courses where we integrate and differentiate and we find expected values of exponential functions,
sure,
et cetera, but I don't think that's what we're talking about in this focus group, right?
Okay. You convinced me. If the comment about calculus was about integration and differentiation, I agree. This course does not need to require that.
Okay.
Hi, this is Luba. Could we turn again to who is the audience? I've been taking some more sophisticated statistical courses on statistical department, and I don't think they have problems with the students in graduate courses because they usually will have, for example, multivariate statistics, and you won't have biology students on these courses because it's usually is taught with a lot of math, expects a lot of background, and it's completely justified because those people are going to be consultants, and they are going to do consulting work, and they really need to have the whole mathematical apparatus behind their methods. We have to understand that. But I think mostly when we're talking about the second level statistical course, we're talking about different audience who is going to use those methods but not on that level, and they don't mostly need that level of mathematics behind it. I don't know, maybe it's my misconceptions just because I'm working with this group of students.
Okay, well, I want to be very careful to keep to our timeline constraint. Where would you like to go for next time? I mean, I'm going to try and give some highlights, and please feel free to edit or provide feedback to whatever I send you guys later today or tomorrow. Do you think I found this fairly helpful? I don't know if you guys have. I mean, can we continue just down this list of questions?
I think
comment. I guess this is Nathan. I would say, yeah, I'm picking up where we left off. Personally, I feel like there's still more to talk about in terms of content. I mean, we started talking about those first few things, which was great, but kind of picking up there just because I feel like I've got some things I want to hear about and say still about content.
Okay. This is Amy. I'd like to agree with Nathan. I'd like to bring out the content a little bit at this point. I think we can define the level of student coming in, but I think we're all fairly on the same page. And Danny, I'd just like to say that I just want them to know what a function is. I would like them to be able to know what a slope is once I put a measurement and a context to it. So that doesn't need, then they had calculus. I think they need less calculus and more of the terms that you were talking about.
Yeah, no, I agree. I forgot that people associate calculus with these particular techniques of integration and differentiation, and those are not so useful, and not at all useful for this kind of course. I agree completely.
Thank you.
This is John Clement. I think one other thing might be useful is what do you expect a student coming into this course, what skills they have from STAT or from algebra? That would define more or less, because we had the misunderstanding about what you mean by calculus, and so I think maybe we should have the sense of what skills they should have coming out of, coming into the course.
So just very specifically, like understanding a function is one we've talked about quite a bit, and
so
that would be good.
And
I mean, understanding a slope might be helpful, you know.
Yes, but also what do they need to know about tests? They probably need to know what a p-value is. I don't know. Some people teach things with some people don't do it with critical values anymore, and some people do. So some courses will deal with that. You know, should they know what power is, or should they not know what power is? I mean, most of the basic stat courses don't teach that, but the AP stat test I think does have it on it.
Okay.
So those kind of skills, you know, just specifically what do they need to know?
And I'd like to suggest that we think about what they should be able to do when they finish the course, not just what topics are covered, but what kinds of tasks they should be able to perform, whether, you know, reading a research paper, performing an analysis of data of this type of complexity, those kinds of questions.
Say that one more time. I'm sorry, I didn't quite...
So the issue I'd like to discuss is what the skills should be when they leave the course.
What skills should they leave, okay. Okay, that sounds good. I'm going to try and write something up. Again, I'm going to try and not to put too much of my opinion in, so let me know if I do. I'll probably send out another meeting. December gets really busy, I think. So do you think around the end of January would be a good time for our next meeting?
I think that would be fair.
Mm-hmm. That's fine.
Is that a bad time, too? Or
go for
from
it.
From my point of view, it's fine.
Okay.
Thanks for all your work,
great.
Chanda.
Yes,
thank you so much.
Thanks a lot, Chanda.
Thank you.
Well, thanks. I've enjoyed the conversation, and I'll hopefully get to talk to you again in a month or two.
Okay, bye.
Okay,
thank you. Thank
you,
everyone. Bye.
Thank you. Please stand by.